EG's Future of Manchester event was every bit as good as you would have expected. It ranged far and wide through topics affecting one of the UK's most dynamic cities. I'm Damien Wilde, Editor-in-Chief of EG, and as Chair, you would expect me to say it was insightful, enjoyable and challenging too, but you be the judge. In this last third session of the day, our panel talked about the importance of community-supported development and the future of mass participation events like Pride. We also talked about how developers in Manchester get this better than most, so there are lessons here for other cities too. So there's been so much talk today around changes that Manchester and other cities will experience as a result of the crisis that we've been through, and how perhaps it's accelerating many of those changes that were in play already around retail, around leisure, the office and transport. And in the last session, and if you didn't catch it, I'd recommend you go back to the interview with Andy Burnham and our opening session as well. But there, the mayor talked about the need to put more of a focus on people and communities, and perhaps from a real estate perspective, less of a focus on projects and schemes and more of a focus on place as well, and how people need to be put at the heart of the solutions we find in the months and years ahead, which takes us very nicely into this last session, which is very much focused on those and other issues around doing it our own way and how a devolved city might look. And how we can benefit. And joining me, we have another great panel, is Victoria Armstrong, CEO and founder of the Oasis Centre, Chris Cheek, Principal and Managing Director of Avis & Young, Mark Fletcher, Chief Executive of Manchester Pride, and Jamie Kerr, Partnership and Property Director of LCR. And Victoria, perhaps I can start with you. In that last session, which I know you were avidly tuned into, you heard Andy Burnham talk about people and communities and place. And is that one of the ways in which you think we may emerge stronger, Manchester may emerge stronger after this crisis passes?
Absolutely. As I was saying previously, that I think it's so important that we start with people, which then grows into community, which then enhances culture. And I think that we already, pre-pandemic, were recognising that we have to be listening to our communities and hearing what they need, and actually using the actual community to be the answer to that need. So it was really exciting to hear what Andy had to say.
Okay, good. And Mark, moving on to you, how do you think Manchester and other cities may change as a result of that, and really with a focus on perhaps not the ones I mentioned in the beginning, but do you think there are other ways in which the city might emerge changed and perhaps stronger?
I do, yeah. I think people have really become accustomed, found a different way to live to get through this pandemic, and it's really going to have an impact on culture and the way in which we engage generally in society. There's a real strong sense of community, and we know that throughout Greater Manchester that exists and is very, very strong. So people, I feel, I still want to, there's still going to be the motivation to be around people, but what that looks like in society is going to be very, very different. The effects on the economy, the effects on social interaction, everything is going to look different. And I can say that with some certainty because it already does. As we're easing lockdown at the moment, we can see the way that people are going about their daily lives, where they're working, how they're working, what their plans are, how they're going to think about socializing, what exercise looks like, what their commute to work may have been, where are they working, are they still working? You know, the impact is going to be massive, and I think things are going to change. Part of me when saying that just occasionally becomes slightly nervous because, as you know, I would say as a race, human beings are quick to forget. Also, so you know, there could be a tendency to slide into old habits and go back to the way things were. But I don't think in a progressive city such as Manchester that's the way it's going to be. I think there is change on the horizon.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very good to hear. And Chris, moving on to you, where do you think those changes will be most profound? And this is a very difficult question that I've asked others, and I'll ask you it as well. But you know, if you can sort of quantify timescales, are we talking months or years?
Do you know what? I think there will be profound change, but that in many cases, that change was happening anyway, and COVID will be an accelerant of that rather than a catalyst for change, perhaps, rather than bringing too much new, really. We're having to learn new ways of life. Mark's point about slipping back into old habits very quickly is well made. But I think there are some fundamental changes. I mean, in my sector, in real estate, we have to maintain a commercial view, but occupiers drive the whole real estate machine, certainly on a commercial basis. And occupiers realize very quickly, or have increasingly realized, that people are central to everything they do. And therefore, their workspaces that they are creating have people centrally to that. And that will be accelerated. We will continue to see employers putting people central. Property costs are about 10% of a business's costs. The rest is largely made up of people. So the acquisition and the fight for talent is really important. So we will see after this, as we return to some sort of normality, we will see an increased focus on creating those workspaces that have people central to them.
Okay, that's good to hear.
And I'm not dodging the timescales question.
I think we'll come back to it.
The answer is, I don't think we don't know. And anybody who puts timescales on anything at the moment is probably guessing, as we're all guessing. And therefore, I think it's incredibly difficult. We all have to, as people who contribute to shaping the city and underpinning social services and all of those things, have to roll with the punches as we go and pivot. And I know that's a word that's overused, but pivot is a really good word to use at this time, because people have to adapt how they look, how they view it.
Rolling with the punches isn't a bad phrase either, I'm sure. And lastly, Adam Wisher, I'm so sorry, Partnerships and Property Director of LCR. Well, welcome, Adam. And where do you see those changes as you plan for what you're doing in Manchester around Mayfield and elsewhere? How has your thinking changed over the last few months?
Yeah, I think a lot of our work in wider Manchester is looking at, helping to facilitate delivery of homes. And I think, there's a lot of talk, quite rightly, on the commercial market and events market that the guys on the call and the community market as well. But I think residential, we're all sitting in our homes, aren't we? And after spending 3 months in our homes, we know what we like and what we don't like about them, and what we've perhaps changed going forward. So, I think the way people's homes are designed and the importance of areas for working and for living, and also private space within apartment buildings will become really key. I think, in our own communities, we've stayed and we've started exploring a bit more, the green spaces and the open spaces that you really value. So I think at a community level and a residential level, people are really starting to think about what's important. And I think even from an early stage where we're involved, we're encouraging, design teams and architects to really look at that, and working with developers through that process as well.
Okay. You talked about community and regional work. There's clearly going to be a balance, and we could talk all day about what that balance between home working and office based working might be. But I wonder, Adam, how you see a community changing, really. Whether do you think there'll be more, regional hubs that people work out of, rather than it's not so much home versus office?
I mean, some of the stuff we've been looking at around, not even the satellite towns, yes, but also, smaller suburban centres. And, we've got some fantastic, old assets around some of the stations we're looking at. So Mayfield on one scale, again, fantastic space to reuse and reactivate. But, smaller suburban stations where, could become space for, charitable businesses, social entrepreneurial businesses and community space and potentially co-working, I think, an area between the home and the office that could be used to activate. I think there'll be some really good opportunities for that. And that's something we've been thinking about for the last year. Where are they? And what do we do to help bring those forward? And really, the communities know what they need. So, starting to engage with the local groups to understand how those spaces need to be used. And, you know, is it just a blank canvas to come in and adapt and change with the needs, really? So, yeah, interesting around local community spaces will be key, I think, as well.
Thank you, Victoria. You were nodding there. Do you see you're very close to some of the people who use and need those spaces? Is provision inadequate today? Is more needed? And can they turn into the sorts of spaces that that Adam is describing there?
Yeah, I think that we've always had a need for more community spaces, for more support, and to be valuing the individual. And actually, COVID, this pandemic has actually, it's shown up a need that was already there and has been there for decades. And I think it will accelerate the need to see more communities supporting each other, encouraging one another, and finding ways of daily becoming the answer to isolation, deprivation, mental health, mental well-being. And I think that charities in this city are already gearing themselves up for that desire to support more and more people, because as it was said earlier on, that there is a wave coming of so many more people needing to feel valued and cared for and loved post-pandemic. And we need to gear ourselves up to be there listening and understanding and being relevant to this crisis that's here and that's up ahead of us.
Mark, do you share that view?
It's going to be quite an interesting time in the months to come. There is this, you know, there's a definite distinct fear that once the job retention scheme ends and people are returning from furlough leave, that many people are going to lose their jobs. And that's going to have a massive impact on the way that we operate as a society. You know, my Great Manchester is going to look very, very different. There are going to be people in much need of help and assistance. And it's going to have a massive impact on the economy and the way, you know, all of the trends, the way in which people go about their daily business, how people shop, where they shop, what's important, what they prioritize within their life, and what then becomes deprioritized, is going to have a massive impact on the way the shape of the city, in my view.
And how we gather too, and whether we can gather at a mass participation event like Pride anytime soon.
Yeah, precisely. You know, one of the things I'm constantly saying at the moment is I don't know what I don't know. And at the moment, I don't know what I don't know. But what I do know is that there's a high demand from audiences to come together. For something such as, you know, Manchester Pride Festival, it's the city's largest annual event. And it has much more meaning than many other straightforward live music events, because it's a political coming together. It's a celebration of identity. And it's really important, and it's part of the foundation and identity of Manchester itself. So there's a lot of passion for people to want to ensure that they can continue to celebrate themselves and come together to celebrate diversity in that way. What that's going to look like this year is going to be very different from the, you know, the wonderful celebrations that we've become accustomed to. And then moving forward, I can't help but think it will have an impact, you know, as to what that looks like. We've been seeing many different events pop up around the city as part of the festival in previous years. And we're looking at ideas to ensure that we can celebrate identity. This year, there are lots of partners that want to work with us. Now, it opens it up, you know, mass gatherings, whilst at the moment they're not permissible. And for some foreseeable future, you know, event organisers such as myself are going to err with caution towards what an event will look like. What it has done is opened events up to whole new audiences, and this level of engagement from communities which were on the periphery of live events are now engaging through virtual or online platforms, and really tightening that sense of community. I, no less than anybody else, I'm quite anxious to see what things are going to look like on the other side of this, you know, sort of vaccine coming within the next 6 months, or indeed what summer 2021 can bring for us. You know, our 2020 festival has been postponed to August 2021 at the moment. We're working towards delivering a festival in a format that we've all known and loved, being around people, vibing off that atmosphere and celebrating as one. Until we know that it's safe to do that, we have to constantly innovate and think about what coming together is going to look like in the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah, it's going to be challenging for sure. Adam, all this talk of community, I just want to link it and segue into development, really. And does it require a change of approach from the property industry to instill a people first, community first way of thinking?
I think so. I think I suppose we're slightly different, different type of developer, different type of business, but a lot of our decisions are based on, you know, creation of public value. So every time we're assessing, you know, investments, it's not just about the financial return, but it's about the public value that creates. So, you know, these things like creating new community spaces, and reactivating old spaces, for us, that's the extra over, really, that helps create that public value beyond, what a traditional development approach would be. But, you know, as I said, I think earlier I was on the pre-call that, you know, the larger urban developers, that they all get this. They all get the need to bring the community in at an early stage and engage. So, again, one of the themes that, this is being done already. And it might help accelerate some of that thinking. But yeah, that public value first as a way to make decisions and investment and taking that long-term view. Yeah, it's something we're looking to do as a business.
And have you established principles around it in what good looks like in terms of community consultation? It's a topic that crops up in a lot of the discussions we have. And I think there's a universal view that it needs to improve, and I'm always interested to hear how it can be done effectively.
Yeah, well, certain cases, is early the better is one perspective in terms of how we engage with the community. I just try to look at the work we're involved in, but we're involved at the early stages and looking at land acquisition, which is sensitive and commercial, but to be able to bring the community along, with you and get their ideas early, again, I think is something which the partnership did well at Mayfield. Earlier the better, and engaging, with the right people in the community is key.
And that's so important, isn't it, Victoria? If a community is to feel that development is something that's done with them and not to them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people in history have felt that all of a sudden, how did this happen? And even if it's a good idea, if they weren't brought into the discussion, there's just the human condition where we just go, I don't like this, or I'm not happy with this, or I'm fearful of this because I don't. Yeah. And, you don't understand it. And like what I like that's been happening in the past few years is that developers have been with us, they've been coming into our centre. You know, we have hundreds and hundreds of people through our doors, and that we know really well. We know our community, we understand where they're at, and we're trusted by our community. So when a developer comes in and they come into our centre, they get to know us. There's genuine friendship and trust building, and that just makes the whole journey so much easier and so more real. It's about building relationship and trust, because if you've got trust there in the community, you know, anything's possible. So I just think partnership is vital and has been, and moving forward, partnership is so important, and having conversations, real conversations, and just trying to be real with one another, I think is very important.
Well, that's been a big issue on an ongoing basis in leisure and hospitality over the last 3 months, and others as well, that trust and open dialogue between landlords and tenants, as well as developers and communities. And are you optimistic about that? Do you see things improving?
I am optimistic. You know, I've had first-hand experience. In 2019, the format of Manchester Pride Festival was changed because of the developments in the area that we formerly delivered the festival, the main elements of the festival. And I'm talking about areas in and around Manchester's famed gay village. You know, if you look at the areas that surrounding the site that we used to deliver, you've got the development of the campus site, you have Manchester New Square. And we were engaged in conversation with each of them. Campus has been particularly good with engagement in terms of recognising what the area is and what it means to people and what the community of that space is, who the community are and what that space means to the community, and ensuring that there's a level of integration by acknowledging and respecting the heritage of that space. And wanting to work with, you know, event organisers like us, wanting to be part of the community. If we talk about more in depth about what happened with Mayfield, so you can see that last year we introduced a brand new event, a high capacity event at Mayfield, and the way in which we worked with them was incredible. They were really, everything that they wanted to do, they had the community at the heart of it. It was real, genuine, authentic engagement. Obviously, they're involved in placemaking, and we wanted to ensure that we can go on that journey with them. Its proximity to Manchester's gay village was key for us. But the way in which they became engaged was wholeheartedly authentic. They created an opportunity for us to have a space to host our celebration, which for, you know, LGBTQ plus people provided that they're talking to communities and making sure they feel part of what's being developed in that area, and then welcomed. And I think that's the way to do it. If you've got genuine community consultation, but then further than that, you're investing in events, in ideas, in initiatives that communities are passionate about, they can see it's authentic. And then, you know, I say they, but we, I am a part of our community too. And then I feel that that space is for me, and the developers are being sensitive and recognizing the people are essential to the creation and the success of that development, and recognizing that, I think it's quite unique, recognizing that Manchester's makeup is quite unique, and ensuring that all feel included in a way in which is, I can't say this word too often, authentic. Mm. And the way for authenticity is to talk to people and organisations, to engage them from day one. Some good examples that I've had there. There are also some terrible examples where there's...
Go on, give us one of those.
I'm not going to talk to a bit about any particular organisations, but there can be ways in which people just do not fully understand what that engagement should look like, and some developers that are not really too interested in what that genuine investment in a community can be, and that's where you see they come unstuck, and it's very potentially very dangerous.
And that's paying lip service, is it? Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, that's I've heard it described as that. I could be much more vociferous, I guess.
Okay, I'll bring Chris back in a second, but Adam, just lastly on that, because there was a ringing endorsement of consultation around Mayfield there, and also campus as well in the city. And I wonder whether it's better in Manchester than other cities. Are there more shared objectives there in your experience?
I think, again, with say national business and we've got a regional headquarters in Manchester, I think Manchester's always had that strong civic leadership, hasn't it, and that track record in engaging with the community and working in public and private partnerships. So I think that sort of track record lends itself to these type of events and that type of feel where it brings people along with the development. I think there's good examples and good work up and down the country. Manchester definitely leads the way in terms of that joint working and that partnership approach to make these spaces and make these places happen, definitely.
Chris, if I could bring you in, development in Manchester has, transformed the city over the last 30 years. But have all necessary aspects of development kept up? Has social infrastructure kept up, for instance?
I think the short answer to that is no, and that's no criticism of the leadership or the at the time. I think it was necessary potentially to drive forward Manchester to create the city, the really strong European city that we know it is today. But increasingly there is a cohort of developers within the city. There's an absolute will from civic leadership to make social investment, social impact from development, to capture it really, to capture it properly and to make sure we're capturing it properly. And I look at the Mayfield partnership as being central to that. And I look at other developers across the century, across the city that are central to that. But it needs to be driven by culture. At the moment, beyond planning, we're not really capturing it properly. We're letting developers potentially choose whether they want to engage in a socially aware way. And policing is an ugly word, but we need to perhaps drive a culture more than police it going forwards. And we need to make sure we're encouraging that culture from the top down. And I know Andy Burnham speaks about this regularly, and I know Joanne Roney speaks about it regularly, about ensuring that developers in our city and across GM, and I look at some brilliant stuff going on in Stockport at the moment that's really helping to drive their economy and benefit the people of Stockport. And so it's culture really that will drive that going forwards. And we naturally have to be more socially aware of human beings. And that's not precluding developers who need to be commercial as well. There is there's an element in this about valuation as well, which is incredibly dull, but the RSCS need to bring into how they adopt approaches to valuation so that social credits can be captured and there's more emphasis on delivering products around that have social impact.
Okay, well, an important consideration, but culture is difficult to change quickly.
Yeah, but as I said earlier, this is a movement that was happening anyway. I was having conversations with Joanne Roney at the City Council about increasing social awareness amongst developers when she started in her post. And I know there's been a will before that through other individuals at the City Council and at the Combined Authority and at the Mayor's Office. So hopefully, I truly believe, and I talk about, I've used the word accelerant a lot this morning. I think the COVID situation will be an accelerant for seeing much more socially aware people within our cities.
Okay, well, we've only got a few minutes left, and I gather my image has disappeared from the screen, but not to worry. In the last few minutes, I wonder if you could paint a picture about what, you know, the headline things that Manchester needs to address over, you know, where there is an opportunity perhaps over the coming months that will secure, you know, a brighter future, you know, where real estate really develops hand in hand with people, where community thrive, and what this industry can do to help that happen, because the city seems like one that's rich with good examples. Mark, can I start with you?
Yeah, of course. I think at the moment, the impact on the environment is something that I want to touch on, because as we're talking about being socially aware and involving communities in developments, I think what we're seeing and what we're going to see with trends moving forward is more people becoming environmentally conscious. And, you know, I think the mayor has set out some incredible goals for the city to aim for. In the medium term, I'm talking about coming carbon neutral. And I wonder if that's an opportunity to think about the way we all use city centre, for example. You know, we can see some of the pedestrianisation, the temporary pedestrianisation of main thoroughfares and Dartford city centre. And I'm beginning to wonder what that's going to look like on a longer term basis, especially at the moment with the, you know, the hospitality industry, leisure and hospitality industry, looking to provide outdoor experiences for people. That's intriguing for me. And I think the impact of that could be, you know, hugely beneficial when we talk about reducing the impact of the environment and working towards becoming a carbon neutral city.
Okay, thank you. Adam, how about from your perspective?
I mean, in terms of, you know, a lot of the areas we're working with all the local authorities across Greater Manchester, you know, a lot of the issues around funding of certain projects. So, you know, within the regeneration space, getting the right type of funding into those projects is going to be key, and thinking creatively about, you know, the criteria of how we get that money in. And I think that's going to be key. So, you know, when the markets, you know, do emerge, that there's, you know, there's the funding ready there to help unlock some of these sites. And I think that thinking is well underway and will be encouraged and will really help, you know, Greater Manchester, you know, return quickly.
Okay, thank you. Victoria?
I think for me, it's just one sentence I think of is that we just love our neighbour as we love ourselves. I think that is a fundamental important thing moving forward, that we just basically love one another well, with integrity and honesty and transparency. And I think that with that foundation, a lot of health and growth can come from that.
Well, hopefully this crisis has reminded us of that. And sorry, lastly, Chris.
Yeah, seeing as I was off screen for a little while, I'm going to steal two. Firstly, one of the things that really deeply concerns me about a net result of the COVID situation is the impact on young people and the impact on skills. We have some amazingly skilled people coming through across GM from all sorts of backgrounds, but we need to make sure there's no barriers to them having jobs, fulfilling their potential within GM. And it's absolutely critical important that all of our satellite towns have those facilities for them to grow going forward and develop and fulfill that potential. So skills is really important. We do it incredibly well at graduate level in Manchester. The retention levels are fantastic. You need to concentrate on post-16 and post-18 people as well, so that we maintain them. So that's skills, young people, really important we focus on them. Secondly, this is the time for local authorities to step up. This is the time for local authorities to lead across GM. And in most cases, that's happening, but it's time to use their covenants to help deliver regeneration, to help deliver everything we need them to do at the moment. The private sector is out there to work with them, to help deliver skills, to help deliver what we need across GM, but it's time for local authorities to really step up and take that lead. And I appreciate funding is difficult from central government, but that's incredibly difficult, but I think we can unlock it. We've done it before, we've got the skills, and we've got really willing people.
Okay, well, that's a perfectly optimistic note to end on. Skills, young people, capitalising on public sector covenants, a transport revolution we talked about earlier, that was one of Andy Burnham's message, yeah. And community consultation has come through loud and clear as well. But notwithstanding all of that, I'm sure many of us are craving getting back to an office one day for the positive aspects of being in the office and perhaps engaging in some leisure activities as well. Thank you to all of you on this last panel. Thank you to everyone who's taken part today. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to everyone who's tuned in. And thank you to everyone for coping with some technical issues today. And no doubt we'll be coming back to digital infrastructure in another EG event soon. But thanks again, and see you again sometime.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to our panelists for that, and thank you for listening. We'll be looking at the future of other key cities in the weeks and months ahead. Stay up to date with all of the latest news, opinion, analysis and research from the EG Group by signing up to all of our podcasts. And subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all of our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.